Welcome back to the afternoon stretch. Brenna Reagan, Ray Dosky, Zach Williams here inside the Strike and Spare Family Fun Center studios. Glad to have you all with us on this May 23rd, Monday. It doesn't feel like Monday, but it is a Monday today, so it's all the same. Got a fun one here. We hadn't had Clint on in a little bit. It's been a couple months, I believe, since we've had him on. Good buddy of the show, Clint Lamb. You can, of course, find him on Twitter at Clint R. Lamb. He's verified, so, you know, he's one of the chosen few out there. Team reporter for Bama On 3 and On 3 Sports. Clint, how are you doing, my man?
I'm doing fantastic. How you doing today, Zach?
Doing well. Of course, we tried to hook up on Friday, and that got pushed to today because I just know schedules, and then when news like this hits, it gets crazy immediately. So I totally understand you completely giving me the Heisman on my text message and not responding.
This is supposed to be the slow part of the off season, and as long as these SEC coaches keep opening up their mouths in front of reporters and media alike, I mean, I don't think it's going to be that much of an off season.
Well, you know, and that foyers perfectly into where we were, you know, Thursday, Wednesday, when this all hit with Saban and Jimbo Fisher. You know, first, give me your first thoughts on that, because obviously you come from the Bama side. So I do think inherently, just because we talk about the game all the time here on the show, that there's going to be a little bit of more of a Bama spin on it for you, just because that is what you cover and that's your bread and butter. Where do you feel when you first heard this? When you first heard Saban go into, I'm assuming that was like some sort of boosters meeting or whatever, because it sounded like he was talking to business people of that area. What were your first thoughts when you heard Saban make his comments about the NIL?
Well, I wasn't there in attendance. I wasn't able to be. But when I first saw the quote pop up on Twitter, I 100% thought it was fake. The person that I saw reporting it, you know, someone that's kind of newer in the industry, not saying that they're not trusted by any means. It's just, you know, you would never imagine Nick Saban to say something like, you know, Texas A&M bought every player. We didn't buy any player. And so when I first saw it, I completely dismissed it. And then when, you know, someone that I know personally, I'm in the press box with them every week, when I saw them essentially tweet the same thing, I was floored. You know, people that I've talked to who kind of are in the know, they've kind of hinted at the fact that they think that Nick Saban didn't fully realize that the media was in attendance. You know, he thought he was talking to people kind of behind the scenes, and you get a lot of that as far as, you know, coaches and stuff kind of rallying the troops behind the scenes and things like that. And then when it actually became public, you know, he came out and he apologized for attacking individuals. And I think that I don't think that if he would have been in front of the media or realized that he was in front of the media, I don't think that you would have got him going after people like, you know, Jackson State and a guy who he loves and works with in Deion Sanders. To me, that kind of also points to this idea that, you know, I don't think he was trying to necessarily out anybody publicly, but more behind the scenes. But the bottom line is that it got out, and it was not a good look. And I think that he was, you know, it was the correct move for him to come out the next day and apologize for it.
Yeah, I think what it seemed like from Nick Saban's point of view is he's trying to sell to these, you know, Alabama interests that, you know, oh, because you really think Alabama didn't buy a single player? You know, that's kind of bull.
Well, it's the old joke, right? Yeah. Of like every time.
But he's selling.
Yeah, yeah. A new Bama player joins before NIL. It was always like their first post, like, I'm so excited to go to Alabama. Then their next Instagram post is like them in front of a scat pack. Like,
well, what's the thing you do with you go, hey, look at what these people had. Look at their pretty toys. We need those toys. I mean, that's what he's trying to do. I don't know who's record. I don't know why you're recording that meeting, but yeah. Because the Deion slight was also just out of left field. Like, you're Alabama and you're mad that they got the number one like some HBCU got a prospect. I think he was just trying to play his position, and for whatever reason, that got out into the media.
I think, you know, with the Deion Sanders thing, I think the reason for bringing that up is a place that wouldn't typically have been able to land the top recruit in the country is able to sign him. I think he was trying to paint the picture to people, hey, this is to a point where even if you're, you know, a smaller, you know, HBCU, if you're willing to put that money up front and you're willing to kind of do some of this stuff, you can get the best of the absolute best. There is no school that is off the table if you're willing to, you know, utilize this NIL stuff. And as far as, you know, Alabama, the way that Nick Saban has said that he wants to kind of structure things as far as NIL is he wants there to be enough Bryce Youngs on the team, guys who are already at Alabama who have been rewarded through pretty big, sizable NIL deals, to be able to entice some of these players without them having to go and say, hey, we'll promise you X amount of money if you come play for us. Instead, it's looking at Bryce Young and saying, okay, that's their starting quarterback, their star, reigning Heisman Trophy winner. He's, you know, before he even took a snap, he had already gotten $1 million NIL deal with him already being on campus. When I get there, if I choose to go play for Nick Saban at Alabama, I'll be well positioned for the NFL. But I also know that once I'm there, they're going to be able to take care of me. That's kind of what he wants to do. He has no problem with players getting paid. He just doesn't want the decision to be made, okay, I want to go to this school because I'm getting paid X amount of money. He wants you to make your college decision and then be rewarded through NIL deals through that way. And he doesn't necessarily think that some of these other schools, whether Jimbo Fisher is involved with that process or not, you know, you got collectives out here that are kind of acting independently from college programs. And, you know, the word out on the street is they're paying athletes huge sums of money with absolutely no accountability, and it's very hard to prove. You know, I think Jimbo Fisher earlier today, he came out and said only one of Texas A&M's 11 early enrollees had an NIL deal already in place before they came to Texas A&M. When you look at it that way, it's like, okay, but were things promised? You know, on paper, you might not have anything exactly in agreement, but they might still be there because you've made promises to them based off of money. Not saying, you know, one way or the other that that's what Texas A&M is doing, but I think that, you know, when Greg Sankey's looked into it, he's made some comments about how they're seeing a lot less, you know, NIL people getting paid, you know, to provide services and capitalizing on their name, image, and likeness. You're seeing more just straight payments. And I think that that's something that Nick Saban is trying to avoid, or at least that's what he's telling people.
We're talking with Clint Lamb. He covers Alabama football for On3 Sports, that is. Follow him on Twitter, at Clint R. Lamb. Now, I mean, before we go further with any more of like what Jimbo or anyone said, do you feel like with Saban, I feel like this is one, I'm going to ask a two-part question here because it's going to get deep and you're going to have to probably ask me what the second part of it was. But the first question is, do you feel like this is the cracks in the foundation of the legacy, not legacy, but of the foundation that Saban has built at Alabama? Because it kind of feels like he's not moving with the times here. And then two, do you ever see him maybe making an about face and going back on what he's saying with this and coming up with the collective? Because it feels like Alabama could do that overnight if they wanted to.
I think it's already in place. You know, from people that I've talked to, it's not that Alabama doesn't have the collectives. It's that they're not wanting to utilize those and target high school kids to say, hey, you know what I think Nick Saban's been frustrated with, especially in recent, you know, weeks about the whole process, is when a recruit comes to him and he's trying to, you know, get a guy to commit to Alabama and they say, hey, coach, you know, X program just offered me, you know, $800,000 if I'll commit and go play for them. Can you match that? Nick said, you know, he doesn't have to know what the media is saying or what, you know, A&M or anybody else is admitting to. If a player's telling him that's what's happening behind the scenes, that's the most reliable source you could possibly have. But at the same time, I guess you could also argue that a player could make that up, you know, to try to get money out of them. But with Saban, I don't think it's necessarily one thing about Nick Saban's coaching career is he's always been willing to adapt. And what there's kind of always been the same process, right, where he'll come out against something and he'll complain about it because he doesn't like it. It's hurry up offense. It's transfer portal. It's all kinds of different things that he doesn't think is good for the game. And people always argue, well, he's worried about it being a chink in the armor and, you know, him, you know, not having the same advantage. You know, he's a defensive-minded guy. If you let offense start running rampant in college football, he won't be as effective of a head coach. And then, you know, instead he'll warn you for a while, and then he'll counter and say, okay, I'll utilize this the same you guys are, but, you know, I'm going to make you pay for it. And then he ends up doing it better than a lot of other people can. So I'm wondering, I know that Alabama has collectives in place, and I think that's kind of what he was getting at with, you know, the speech that he was originally giving was, if things don't change with some of these other programs, we're going to have to adjust and have to, you know, start targeting some of these high school kids and promise, which is not, by the way, everybody thinks that you know, buying recruits is legal right now. It's not. The problem is that collectives have a loophole, and there's nothing in the contract that mentions the school or that they have to play for the school as a condition to get the money. But it is essentially, you know, I think the collectives have done a fantastic job of covering their tails as far as NIL are concerned. But Saban's essentially saying, hey, you know, we got to start ponying up some money if things don't change. With where college football is at, with the NCAA and the fact that, you know, through litigation, they're not really protected from being sued. We're trending toward what we have right now, which is more of the same. And Alabama, I think, will adjust. I just don't think that Nick Saban believes that's good for college football, so he's fighting it. But if that's something that college football wants to keep around, that's something that he'll adjust to.
Because, you know, obviously this all starts just because the Supreme Court starts sniffing around NCAA and college football and is like, hey, there is something screwy going on here. So NCAA just, I mean, almost like immediately throws up NIL. They just throw it out there. There was no, you know, I think I talked about it on Friday. There, you know, Texas and Oklahoma can't join the SEC for like 5 years, but NIL was done overnight, you know, for something that soon and for that big, they didn't do any of their due diligence. Do you feel like, a lot of people are already saying these coaches are starting to band together and you're starting to hear more noise about it. NIL is going to get changed. Do you think that's actually going to happen, or do you think that this is kind of going to be just a symptom that we're going to hear for the next few years while people start adjusting to NIL?
I think it's going to be a slow process. I don't think that it should be, but based off of, you know, where current trends are, you're right. When they really need to get something done, they get it done, and right now they're kind of, you know, it's the NCAA in this particular case, and I'm not a supporter of the NCAA. I think they've mishandled this entire situation from the beginning.
Shockingly.
In a lot of ways, their hands are tied. And what I find fascinating is if the transfer portal aspect of it does not come in the same offseason as passing the ability to profit off your name, image, and likeness, we don't see what we're seeing to this degree. You would see it on the high school level, which is, you know, a lot of what Nick Saban's talking about in his criticisms. But you also have players, you know, like Caleb Williams, and I'm not saying, I'm just using him as an example. If he wants to, if he doesn't feel like, you know, he was already on campus, you know, he couldn't really, you know, capitalize on getting to pick a school and everybody, you know, having bidders at that point. So if he wanted to, you can enter the transfer portal, put yourself out there, and if Oklahoma didn't pony up at that point, somebody else would be willing to. And I'm just using him as an example, but the transfer portal and having the ability, if a player could transfer and they had to sit out, then they might not be willing to do that even if they were going to get paid more money somewhere else. But the fact that you can transfer immediately, be immediately eligible, there's no contracts, there's no, you know, commitment to the school really. It's kind of the wild, wild west out there, and I think it's just this combination of factors. Not only do you have to worry about recruiting the high school level and, you know, keeping your own players happy because of the transfer portal, you also have this ongoing NIL thing where you're trying to navigate, you know, not just your typical recruiting tactics. It's also making sure that guys don't feel disrespected by the amount of money that they're getting. What are you able to do for them, both the guys that you're bringing in and the guys you already have on campus? So it's just a very fascinating, interesting dynamic with the whole NIL process that, I'll be curious to see how teams like Alabama, you know, adjust. I think when you look at Dabo Swinney and Clemson, I think they've probably been the slowest as far as their adjustment to the transfer portal. Ultimately, I think that's going to hurt Dabo Swinney and that program. Hopefully, Alabama and Nick Saban doesn't let the same thing happen with them on the NIL front.
This is the world libertarians want, man. I mean, just total anarchy, free. Like you talk about free market. This is NIL is about as free as it gets right now.
Clint, we don't typically do this, but you're giving us a lot of good stuff, and I still have tons of questions. Would you be able to hold over with us for another segment through the break?
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, my man. We got to run to a break. We're right up against it right now. We come back. We got more questions to Clint because he's given just a wealth of knowledge on this right now, and I think it's some really good stuff. If you want to jump in, maybe if you want to ask Clint a question, I think Clint would be okay with that. Jump in, 615-844-5600. Back after this here on the Afternoon Stretch.
Literally trying to clean up a wreck, 65 northbound here at the South Loop. It's busy as expected on 65 up towards Vietnam. That's trying to get up towards Goodlettsville. We're still looking at this wreck over here being cleared on 24 westbound at OHB north of town. As you head up towards the Jolton area, you'll definitely see the flashing lights. Hey, Princess Hot Chicken is now hiring at both locations. Check them out at princesshotchicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
This is Coach Tim Corbin. The Vandy boys play here on WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
So when we brought him home, we didn't realize that Bear, the rescue dog, was actually sick. He had very flaky skin. He was dropping a lot of fur, and the vet wanted to do steroid injections, special dog food. Nothing seemed to work, so I was at a dead end.
DinoVite.com.
I've been hearing DinoVite on the radio for years. It never actually crossed my mind to try it until it finally sunk in. Oh, you're talking about hair and skin. And all right, I'll try it. Well, it took probably 6 weeks, but after we started using DinoVite, no more flaky skin. He doesn't scratch and itch, and he started to put weight on.
DinoVite is nutrition.
I wish that we would have started the DinoVite right away. It would have been so much easier.
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
Every rescue dog in America deserves DinoVite for 90 days.
DinoVite.com.
Hey Nashville, Ray here from Run With It. Let me tell you about our sponsor, Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House. And with four locations in Bellevue, Murfreesboro, Spring Hill, and East Nashville, they're your home for the best gourmet pizza and craft beers in Music City. Join me on Monday nights at the East Nashville location for poker night. And if you think you know everything, try Wednesday night trivia at both locations. Gourmet pizzas, craft beers, online at Boom, BOZZ.com. Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House.
It's a Bill King Show.
Whether you like Alabama or not, you're witnessing an unparalleled, unprecedented run. You're living it. You're watching it. You have memories that are deep of it. To be that dominant, you don't get to see that through the years that much. But this right here is crazy. This right here is off the chart. Can't believe it's happening, and they're not slowing down.
Weekday mornings beginning at 6 on Sports Radio 560 on 95.9 FM.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Welcome back. The afternoon stretch. Bruno Reagan, Ray Dosky, Zach Williams here inside the Strike and Spare Family Fun Center studios. We're keeping the conversation going with Clint Lamb. You can follow him on Twitter at Clint R. Lamb. He covers Alabama football for On Three Sports. A lot of good stuff already out of this. And like I said, we don't ever really keep guests on past another segment just because this is a good stuff right now. Clint's got on. So he's a terrific follow, by the way, on Twitter, because even his it's your biggest tweet was the Will Smith slap Peter Parker's tweet. That was like, were you just sitting there waiting for that, or did that just come to you in a dream?
That was off the cuff. I really wasn't expecting it to have the kind of popularity that it did. It's kind of wild. A lot of times I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, this tweet's going to be a banger, and it gets, you know, 6 retweets, and then that one was just one that just off the cuff threw it out there, and you never know what can happen.
Now you're famous in Hollywood. That's the way it goes. So we're talking about the Nick Saban situation. One thing I wanted to ask you, and really what spawned me wanting to get you on immediately, was I saw what you put up of the Jimbo Fisher quotes, about past quotes, I guess, from what he's mentioned about Saban. Can you kind of go through those and give me your thoughts on each one of those?
Well, you know, kind of the point of it, because I think, you know, Jimbo Fisher going out of his way, he wanted you to know two things about his character from that press conference: that he doesn't lie and he doesn't cheat. And then he proceeds to completely rip on Nick Saban, talked about how all the coaches around college football know what he's like behind the scenes. Anybody that's coached under him, they know what kind of shady business he pulls, and how he had no interest in going to work back under him when he had the opportunity to, when Nick Saban first came back from the Miami Dolphins to college football to coach Alabama. And just in my mind, it was the complete polar opposite from what I'd heard Jimbo Fisher and how I'd heard him describe Nick Saban over the years. And so I went and actually found some of those quotes. Didn't put a ton of time into it. But, you know, I found, you know, four of them where he's not only complimented Nick Saban as a person, but the way he runs his program. You know, I respect everything that they do and how they do it. These are all comments that he's made. And so, and a lot of people in response to this have said, well, he's allowed to change his mind on, you know, based off of, you know, Nick Saban coming after him. And to my response to that has been, absolutely. If he wants to say, you know, I used to have a lot of respect for Nick Saban, but based off of recent events, I'm kind of, you know, I'm having to rethink that respect. I don't agree with the way that he's coming at me. Then I could completely understand that and get behind it. But when you go from saying that you have so much respect for him and his program and he has done things the right way and his ability to adjust and just the greatness of him to kind of in some ways backhandedly mocking people who have considered him the greatest of all time, and then also saying that you've known all along that he runs all this shady business behind the scenes, you were either lying about Nick Saban back then for those 15 to 20 years, or you're lying about Nick Saban now. But that's kind of where the whole thing starts. It's like, okay, you claim you know you're not a liar and you're not a cheater. I mean, clearly, based off of things that you said in the past, the lying part, not necessarily true. Would the cheating part be true at that point? That's kind of where I was going with that, and that was the entire point of it. But, you know, I understand that Jimbo Fisher would be hurt by the comments, you know, especially with him singling him out. That's kind of the one I mean. When you use a big polarizing word like bye, I think that that changes everything. Like, if he would have worded it differently and said incentivized or enticed players to come Dallas or to come to Texas A&M, then I think it would have been, you know, I'm not saying it would have been better necessarily, but I think in some ways it would have. But it was the fact that you came out and the wording that you used was Texas A&M bought their entire, you know, all of their players. And what's interesting is I think that the Texas A&M that Nick Saban was criticizing isn't necessarily the same Texas A&M that Jimbo Fisher's defending. I think Nick Saban was talking about Texas A&M in a very generic way, talking about the collective that is involved with Texas A&M and things that they were willing to do. But, of course, Jimbo is a part of the Texas A&M program. He's the face of it. And so when he's using a generic term like Texas A&M, then Jimbo Fisher's going to take offense to it, and, you know, he's going to get upset about it. So I understand it from both sides. I think in a lot of ways both guys are correct. I just think that Jimbo Fisher crossed some lines. Nick Saban certainly needed to apologize for getting specific on people and programs, but I think Jimbo Fisher, as far as attacking Nick Saban's character and response, was a little bit over the top.
Do you think these guys are ever going to get back in the good graces of each other? And, I mean, it seems like obviously they had a relationship from what we've seen, but then like what Jimbo came out, it seemed like Jimbo maybe just had a – I mean, to me it seems like he had a bit of a tantrum just like Saban. Yeah, it seemed like Saban had a bit of a tantrum also, just in a different way, and then a gut reaction came out of Jimbo. Do you think these guys are ever going to, you know, be civil or any – are we going to go to SEC media days and see these guys just fight?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I've certainly circled SEC media days because and they're not going to be going on the same days, but just seeing how those guys both react, you know, Nick Saban, I think, is going to be going first, if I'm not mistaken, seeing what he says about it. If you just kind of look at how they've both responded to this, A, like I said, I'm not entirely sure Nick Saban knew that he was being recorded and that this was the media was in attendance and that this was going to be going out everywhere. But since then, since he's come to realize that that is in fact what happened, he's come out and he said, I never should have done that. I stand by what I said as far as the overall picture, but getting specific and bringing up Jackson State and bringing up Miami and bringing up Texas A&M, I shouldn't have done that. He seems to be trying to be more professional about it. Jimbo Fisher's kind of staying on the same lines. He's still fired up about it. He's still upset. And so, you know, I would guess that Nick Saban's going to be civil moving forward and kind of handle it the same way he did on Sirius XM radio a few days ago. You know, Jimbo Fisher, we'll see how he feels in, you know, a couple of months. But as far as their relationship being repaired, I would, you know, never say never. But right now, I mean, I don't see a path where it would based off the way, you know, that at least we know Jimbo Fisher feels publicly and probably where Nick Saban's at.
All right, this will be the last question. And really, it might be the most important one. Jake Paul and Logan Paul have made this such celebrity boxing thing so real. Who wins in a boxing match, Jumbo or Nick Saban?
Oh, man. You're
and how much money could we make?
I've seen them both in person. Easily Jumbo. Jumbo would open up as a minus 800 favorite, for sure.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I think a lot of Nick Saban's, intimidation's mental. I don't necessarily – but I'll say this. The man finds a way to win. So if that translated to his boxing career, then, I wouldn't completely count him out. But based off of – there might be a David Goliath type of situation.
I mean, if Ric Flair can win a championship at like 60, 70, Nick Saban could do it.
Hey, Clint, I appreciate you jumping on with us, my man. You can go follow him on Twitter, at Clint R. Lamb. Thank you so much, man.
No problem. I appreciate you guys. Talk to you guys soon.
Absolutely. We'll have him on a whole lot when it comes college football time. And, Lord, and that